Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
To have the beats inside her breast, she devoted her life to being the best. She helped all of those in need. She gave away everything, but she couldn't give away the beats.
Joining me today as guest host and next week as well is the illustrious Travis Hayden.
Hello. Welcome. It's good to be back again.
Yes, from our label International. Big Beat, iHeart Comics, Party Dude.
Hey, you.
Friend of the cause, if you will. How you doing today?
I'm great. It's good to be back in here.
Beautiful day.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous day. The type of day that New Yorkers live for. And starting off our show today is another, we could say part of the cause, friend of the cause, friend of the family, right? We have, I'm going to nail this, Gwen Shantz.
Yes.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Of Brooklyn Grange. Welcome back to, how many times have you been on Heritage Radio?
I think this is my third or fourth time.
Oh. I figured.
Not a million times, but a few.
I thought you, someone like you and how close you are to Roberta's and everything, I figured you'd be on here like once a month.
I've been around, that's for sure.
So before we talk about your new project, which is the Hayseeds Big City Farm Supply, let's talk about the first big project that you did that brought notoriety to the city, and that is putting a, how big of a garden on a rooftop?
1 acre rooftop farm.
Big. For those of us who live in, you know, 400 square foot apartments, break us down what an acre is.
It's 40,000 square feet, so it would be a pretty big apartment. And it's a pretty big farm for New York City. It's the biggest rooftop farm in the world. And
in the world?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
And it's one of the biggest farms in New York City.
Well, step us back. What is the Brooklyn Grange?
All
in
right.
A thesis, mission statement.
All right. Here's an overview. Brooklyn Grange is a one-acre rooftop farm. We kind of differ from most urban farms and gardens in that we're actually a for-profit commercial business. So
boom. So growing green.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to make some money and support ourselves off of urban farming. And we're not planning on getting rich off of it necessarily, but we make a decent wage for ourselves and we're doing something good for the city. We're growing fresh food.
There's no shame in that.
There's no shame. There's no downside. So
no,
we're into it.
It's funny. I think there's this common ethos in the food world, the music world, the art world at this level where you got to be scraping by and scrapping and, you know, for charity, things like that. And the whole idea of pulling a profit or getting paid for the work that you do sort of poo-pooed on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to see where a project like Brooklyn Grange could have very easily been, you know, not-for-profit, charity, community-based, but it's nice, you know?
Yeah,
it's a business.
Exactly. And because we're a corporate entity and a business, we're self-sustaining and we don't need to get grant money. We don't need to get funding from the city or from any other government. And we make money for ourselves. We create jobs. We're creating economic activity, so it's really a win-win.
How many people work for you?
There are only 4 of us that are working full-time so far, but as we grow, we're planning on hiring more and more people.
And who are you selling to? Mainly restaurants, just customers on an individual basis, grocery stores?
Yeah, all of the above. We sell about half of our food to restaurants in Brooklyn and Queens and Manhattan. And then we also have a farmer's market on Saturdays and Wednesdays. And
where's that?
One of them is in Williamsburg on Saturdays. That's the Smorgasburg Market.
Right.
Love it. It's back,
great.
Right?
It's back. Yeah, it just started last weekend.
Congratulations to our friend Chris and Julia who got married in Austin, which is the only reason why I missed the first return of the Smorgasburg. But probably one of my favorite things to add to the Williamsburg weekend is Smorgasburg.
Yeah, it's great. It's right on the riverfront, as you know, and there's the ferry stop right there. It's really just a beautiful place to hang out on a Saturday, get some good food, and buy some vegetables from us.
Have you found that the ferry added more people this time around? I mean, it was Easter weekend, so it was a little weird.
Yeah, this weekend was weird for us because it's early in the season, too. It's only April, so
right.
we don't have a ton of stuff to sell yet. But it was pretty busy. It was a beautiful day yesterday or on Saturday, and it's been really clear. A little bit windy. But,
super windy.
But that's okay.
I want to go even further back. What was the original idea and how does one go about coming up with the overall vision for an acre farm in New York City and the shortened version of how it actually happened?
Because
I think you had a little bit of legal issues or getting permits and things like that.
Yeah, it's tricky because what we're doing here is the farm kind of was the first thing of its kind in New York City, and there are green roofs out there, and those are just rooftops with plants growing on them, and then there's community farms and community gardens and all sorts of urban farming projects. But we were the first to kind of bring the two together on this scale. Back in 2009, my business partner Ben Flanner founded the Eagle Street Rooftop Farm, which
oh, right.
is at Greenpoint.
Right. Smaller.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing, but it's much smaller. It's only 6,000 square feet. So it's a fraction of the size.
Which is still...
still a big apartment.
Yeah, that's still a big apartment.
But
that's at least 2.5 bathrooms.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Serious. And that's a serious farm too. It's great. It's a nonprofit. They grow a lot of food. They have educational programs. It's beautiful. They got chickens and bees and all sorts of stuff. So, but that was kind of a test project for Ben, and he was the one who kind of originally conceived of using a green roof and growing food and trying to take advantage of unutilized rooftop space in New York City to grow vegetables.
That's awesome. Do you do chickens and bees?
We do.
There was a big article in the Times 2 weeks ago about raising your own eggs and chickens and things like that.
I missed that one.
The lovely Kathy Irway was quoted in it. Because nice. She does, I think, chickens on top of the
six point. Yeah.
Yeah.
She just gave us some kegs full of hops, too. And by kegs full of hops, I mean keg barrels that have been cut in half, filled with dirt, and then hops are growing out of them. And they couldn't keep them at the roof over there. I guess they're doing some work or something. So she just gave them to our farm.
So you're going to be growing hops?
Yeah, we'll have some hops this year.
Does that mean you can grow local hops or local made beer?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Let's get
some. We love that.
Let's get some. So what's on the plan for the Grange for this season? What do you got growing? What's going on? Can you talk us through? Because I know there's the list. There's always a list of like what months are good for each produce. But can you tell us like what the highlights of each month of the summer is going to bring us?
Yes. The highlight this part of the year is greens. We've got a lot of really beautiful dandelion and chicory, if you like bitter greens and fancy salad greens.
Mm-hmm. Fancy. Do you sell a fancy salad green mix?
We do.
Mix fancy greens?
Yeah.
Mix fancy greens. We should call them that.
Yeah, it was like a little top hat and a cane.
Monocle.
Hey, you're welcome. That's a free one. It's a free one.
Thanks, Darren.
Yeah.
Pretty soon we're going to have turnips and radishes, which people really love this time of year. They get really sweet because it's so cold outside. Mm. And then later in the season, we get our tomatoes and peppers and carrots and squash and cucumbers, all the kind of fun, fruity stuff that people are really into. The farm stand tends to get a little bit more colorful around July and August.
It's so nice. And what's the ratio of, you know, of what you can grow versus what you can sell? Are you at 100% or, you know, what happens there?
We are totally at capacity. At least last year, we had restaurants and other people calling us up asking for food, and we said, sorry, we don't have any left. We were totally sold out. We grew 15,000 pounds of vegetables last year, and it sold out completely.
Wow.
And this year, we are growing a new farm in addition to all the vegetables that we're growing. So
over the Navy Yard, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're opening a 45,000 square foot farm at the Navy Yard, so we'll be more than doubling our capacity, which is great.
And is there a waiting list already for those people who want to buy produce?
We've got a lot of chefs lined up ready to get some food from us. We're selling CSA shares, so people are buying shares right now, and they'll get a weekly bag of vegetables all throughout the season.
And what's a CSA run, a person?
$540
for the season,
and it breaks down to $22.50 a week.
That's amazing.
Yeah, wow. It's a good deal. You end up saving money, and it's great for us as farmers because we get a bunch of money up front this time of year when we're pretty broke because we haven't been selling vegetables since October.
Totally. Now, working with chefs, especially in a urban environment like New York, are you planning specific products for them, or are you saying this is what we have? So you are.
It's a little of both. We tell them what we've got, and then we also will ask them what they want, and we'll plant seeds for them. Last year, we grew a couple beds of agretti, which is like this kind of funky-looking Italian herb. It's a little bit salty and maybe a little crunchy. It's kind of succulent. It looks almost like a seaweed or something that's growing up in the air. It's really cool.
That's awesome. What is that the weirdest thing that you've planted for chefs?
It's weird to me because I had never seen it. But we grow some other random stuff. Well, we grow okra, which is kind of unusual for this area.
It's a little unusual. Is the climate good for okra?
Yeah, it's great. We get a beautiful okra crop.
I guess I just only associate okra with like the South.
I know. Most people do. It's a beautiful plant, too. It's like this really tall plant. It gets these big whitish yellow flowers.
Right. They get about 5 feet tall, right?
Yeah.
I love okra.
I love okra.
It's one of my favorites.
You know what? I really don't like okra.
Oh, fried okra?
It's too slimy. Yeah, I love the flavor, and as soon as the sliminess kicks in, I'm just totally grossed out.
I wonder if there's a way to like salt it, then remove as much moisture as possible. Just forever slimy?
If you figure that out,
then I'll give you. Hey, you'll be my first.
Invite me over, and I'll eat okra with you.
Snacky Tunes on the hunt for the non-slimy okra.
On it.
And so if people want to sign up for the CSA for the Grange or the new, is it just called like Brooklyn Grange 2, like T-O-O?
Yeah, it's still Brooklyn Grange. It's just we have two farms. It's basically like a farm with two fields. We have two fields now, so.
But you can't drive the tractor from one field to another.
No, we need like a helicopter or something.
That'd be awesome. That wouldn't be the best use of space, but the Brooklyn Grange copter would be awesome.
Yeah, the crop duster.
Ooh.
There you go.
That's a free one. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to come back and talk about the new thing, the Hayseeds Big City Farm Supply, which I'm sure is it's opening today, right?
It opened
or opened
last
the 4th.
Week, last Wednesday.
I can't wait. I can't wait to go. Maybe I'll start growing tomatoes or something like that.
You should.
Okay, well, we're going to come back.
Temples that I built for you, and I sang songs of praise and love, and I sang songs of burying you alive, and I see I had to tear it down.
So we're here with Gwen Sanch of Brooklyn Grange and also of Hayseeds Big City Farm Supply, which is a new DIY farm it yourself, right?
That's right.
No longer just telling people how to do it, but actually giving them the means to do it. So talk to us about, let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about the urban farming movement and about what's happened in New York and how it's had it played in the scene and your involvement in that.
Yeah, well, I think most people that live in New York realize at this point that urban farming and gardening have gotten pretty big, and I get the sense that they're here to stay. It's not just a passing trend. A lot of people have rooftops and backyards and fire escapes, and they want to grow food on them. And some people are just doing vegetables, but there's also this huge beekeeping movement and chickens and bunnies and all sorts of different ways to, like, get farmy here in the city.
What's the legal line? Like, what can you actually do with your space?
You can do all of that. If you're blocking a fire exit, it's a problem. So, like, fire escapes are actually illegal, I believe. But a lot of people grow on them anyways. Bees are totally legal. Chickens are totally legal. No roosters. Roosters are against the law.
Because of the noise?
Yep. Yeah. Noise violation.
Well, I mean, why would you really want, I guess, unless you wanted more chickens.
Exactly, unless you want to raise baby chickens.
That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, it does.
So the urban farming movement, is it young people, old people, across the board? You know, is it people who move here with money in their bank accounts from their parents? Is it poor people? Like, what are we talking about? What's the demographic?
I think it's a big mix. For a while, it's been kind of liberal arts educated, middle class kids that move to New York City and work in artsy or, I don't know, other professions. And
right.
They want to do something trendy. And I think now we're seeing more of everybody doing it. So, like, across ages and races and classes, all sorts of New Yorkers are growing food. And I think a lot of people are realizing it's a good way to supplement your income. You don't have to pay for the food that you grow. You can even sell some of the stuff that you grow, especially with beekeeping and honey. You can make quite a bit of money off of a beehive on your roof. So people are starting to get into it for that reason, too.
Right. So how does one get into this? You know, this someone that's interested, never really grown anything outside of houseplants. And, I mean, what are the startup costs? Like, how would you begin doing this at home?
If only there was a store.
If only there were a place where you could come and buy.
I think that's what you're getting at, right?
Was that pretty thick?
That's pretty thick. So Hayseeds is all about getting you started, right?
Yeah, exactly. And or if you're established already and you need some, like, nice organic fertilizer or chicken feed, you can get it from us. Basically, it's a 3-month pop-up store in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, where we're selling all sorts of farm and garden supplies. So we've got tools and shovels and hoses and things like that, but also chicken feed, rabbit feed, beekeeping equipment, beehives,
classes
and workshops. We just taught one yesterday, actually. We had a free beginning gardening workshop, which was really fun. And then we also have all sorts of, like, soil and soil amendments, fertilizer, et cetera, et cetera. So we pretty much have everything you need. But if you don't have money, you don't really need to buy that much. Gardening can be pretty cheap. There isn't a huge barrier to entry. You just need to find some old buckets. And
right.
The only thing you really need to buy are dirt and seeds. And those can be pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Cheap as dirt.
Is that where that phrase comes from? I did not know that. So let's talk about one of your partners, Meg Pasca, or Meg P, as I've known her for forever, who sort of become one of the leaders, and I would say she's top echelon of homemade everything, bees, chickens,
yeah,
vegetable, things like
the,
that.
She is the Brooklyn Homesteader. She has a blog called Brooklyn Homesteader, and she does it all. She does gardening, and she raises rabbits and chickens and bees, and she's really carved a niche for herself in the Brooklyn and New York City urban farming community, and she's great. She's got a lot of energy. I wish she was here today to speak for herself, but I will speak for her and say that she's awesome.
She's great.
Yes.
She's great. The shock of red hair, the overalls.
Yeah, she's a redhead. I think she gets her energy from that hair.
Yeah, it fuels her soul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did you two meet? Is there like what's the garden at home bee scene like in Brooklyn? Is it pretty inclusive?
There's a real community. The way I met Meg was actually through Chase Emmons, our beekeeper, who's also involved in the Hayseeds farm supply store. Chase and Meg struck up a relationship around beekeeping. They would go to these, like, bee meetups, and they're part of this beekeeping community in New York City. And that's how I met Meg. And we all got talking about how we wanted to sell farm supplies, because it's really expensive sometimes if you want to order specialty farm supplies and garden supplies online. The stuff might not be that expensive, but getting it shipped here
right.
tends to really kill you. So we figured if we get it all shipped at once and we get a wholesale price, we'll get a good deal for everybody.
Now, why are you only open for 3 months?
Because it's a it's a pop-up for various reasons. One, because we didn't want to pay rent for more than 3 months. Okay. This is kind of like the peak season for buying farm and garden supplies. If it goes well this year, who knows? Maybe we'll open up again next spring and stay open a little bit longer. But
you just got to partner with like a Halloween store and just trade off seasons.
That's brilliant. Is that free?
That's free. That's free. And talk also about you have a third partner, don't you? Domestic Construction, who's a design and art production company, right?
Yeah, exactly. Domestic Construction is a company run by two lovely ladies, the girls, Trish and Maureen. And they basically have this big, beautiful studio in Greenpoint. It used to be a garage, and they've turned it into a workshop, and they make all sorts of crazy artsy things in there for different production companies, for music videos and commercials and things. And they wanted to have a pop-up in the front of their space because they had the space for it. And we just, it was like kind of this perfect serendipitous coming together of different people who wanted to do the same type of thing.
Do you find that you need to live in a community like Brooklyn for this, and a Brooklyn Grange, something like that, to come together because it's so many like-minded people with resources wanting to have some sort of, if not the exact same goal, but sort of similar ethos and vision?
I think you'll see projects like this springing up all over the country. I don't think it's specific to Brooklyn. There's a lot of really creative and active people full of energy and motivation in Brooklyn. So it's kind of a unique place in that respect. But yeah, I think the most important thing to all of these projects that I've been involved with is that I've joined up with really smart, energetic, capable, skilled people. And these teams of people just are capable of creating such amazing large projects that one person alone would never be able to do. So it's all about that teamwork, yeah, team spirit.
And do you feel that urban farming has moved way past being a trend, and now it's, I mean, I hate saying trend and movement because it sort of, you know, makes it a niche type of thing, but do you think it's going to become more of a necessity and more of a stable part of culture?
That's a good question. I think urban farming offers a lot, both in terms of the food and the nutritional benefits, but also environmental benefits. Like, it's a great way for New Yorkers to kind of reconnect with nature and do something good for the local environment. I hope that it is here to stay. I know I'm going to be doing it here for a very long time. I have a one-year-old baby, and I definitely want him to grow up in a city full of farms and gardens and bees and chickens. So,
are you making all this baby food from the food you grow?
I do make baby food from the food I grow.
What's on the menu?
Lots of kale.
That's awesome.
And carrots and all sorts of stuff.
Pureed. Who's not snapping off?
Yeah, I put it in the blender.
That's awesome. And then I guess, you know, wrapping it up, what do you see as the future, really, of urban farming outside of urban cities? Do you think it's going to move to the suburbs? Do you think this is a trend that's going to catch on beyond just, you know, rooftops and fire escapes and things like that, with people who actually have legitimate backyards? Are you going to find that movement going out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that already exists. That's how I got into farming and gardening. I used to garden in my backyard with my mom when I was a little kid up in Massachusetts. And I think as Americans get more aware about the food system and they realize that they have to take a little bit more control over the type of food that they're putting in their bodies, I think that we'll see a more diverse food supply and lots of small farms, small gardens. Kind of just a more distributed food system instead of this kind of monolithic centralized thing that we've got going on right now.
What's the cost? I mean, what's comparatively, you know, a bunch of carrots that you grow and sell versus something that you can get in the supermarket?
It's expensive. We basically we're comparable to Union Square Farmers Market or other organic farms at the farmers market. So it's definitely much more expensive than what you'd get at like Associated or Big Y or whatever your
supermarket what are you getting?
Is. But you're getting a more nutritious, cleaner product. You're also not paying into this really distorted food system. The cost of our current commercial or conventional food system is just, it's more than we can even quantify right now. So it's much better to throw an extra dollar or two at your local farmer instead of sending it to Monsanto or whoever else.
Whoever else.
All of those Big bad guys.
Big bad. Are they the bad guys?
Well, yes.
It's okay. You can say it. I mean, you know, take.
I don't want to point fingers. I mean, we're complicit in it too. We all have to take responsibility as individuals and people who eat. So.
Yeah.
I think we're heading in the right direction, though. A lot of people are getting on board with the whole food movement thing. So.
I think once you it gets away from being, and I think it's moved away from being this whole, how do you say, hippie, like, hipster thing. And now it's becoming, as you said, like a real part of this. Like, this is a necessity if we want to keep eating vegetables and not this pre-processed thing that looks like an apple or something like that. Then we're gonna all have to get involved. I think once it moves away from that and starts becoming more of the mainstream as it has, that's when it's really gonna take seed, if you will, or root, or any one of those, and people will find pay dirt in the green that they grow. And that's it on This Week in Puns. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming by. What's all the... let's do the nuts and bolts for the Grange and for hayseeds.
All right. It's brooklyngrangefarm.com. That's the one-acre rooftop farm. Soon to be 2 acres of rooftop farm. Hayseeds is Big City Farm Supply. And we've also got a Kickstarter campaign going on right now. We're creating... On top of all of this other stuff, we're creating New York City's biggest commercial apiary. We're going to have like 30 beehives... Millions of bees, thousands of pounds of honey. So if you want to support that project, you can go to kickstarter.com and find the Brooklyn Grange Apiary Project on there.
That's so awesome. I'm so excited. Thank you for coming in, hanging out with us. You can stick around. We'll play a few songs, eat some pizza.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
And, congratulations on your impending nuptials, if you will.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting married. Yay for me.
Yay for you. Are you going to be providing the own produce? You're going to be like throwing like kale leaves, like bouquet type of thing?
I am. We're going to shut down the farm for a whole weekend so all of my farmers, my farm colleagues can come to the wedding, and we're going to buy up as many vegetables as we can for the wedding so that we can offset any costs associated with shutting down the business.
Awesome. So a wedding drive.
We have a plan. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks like the other thing you're growing this summer is love. And we're super excited about that. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, play some music, and then Alex Pasternak is a no-show today. So we'll be kicking it with Travis Hayden, talking about our label International, what's coming up for you, and, you know, from Brooklyn to Ibiza, right?
Love it. Thank you. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
We are sitting here with the illustrious Travis Hayden, whose hair looks so fantastic after what sounds like a wild weekend out in Williamsburg.
Long weekend.
What'd you see? You saw Lemonade play.
I saw Lemonade play on Friday night at 285 Kent.
Love it.
Stayed there pretty late. And I don't want to talk about the rest.
No, you don't want to talk about the rest?
Nope.
So let's talk about Our Label International. You guys have had a bang-up year so far.
Yeah.
For those who don't know what Our Label International is, please remind our illustrious listeners.
Well, we are a record label, a boutique record label, a digital distributor, and also a music management company. So we're doing mainly DJs, producers, but, you know, also some bands.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
One of those bands is the group that we are a part of, Punches, which we put out our EP, which is selling like hotcakes.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Plaques everywhere.
Plaques everywhere. It just went quadruple platinum.
Yes, twice.
Twice. So that's octuple platinum, yes. Which is great. Which yeah. is great. Which makes us not winning the Mega Millions lottery just so fantastic.
It's great.
So other than that mega hit, what do you have coming up? What's coming out? I know that your boy, Gigamesh, just played a sold-out show at Yotel this weekend.
Yeah, he's touring quite a bit. We manage him. We released his last EP. He's going to be releasing on Kitsune in June a new EP worldwide, and so that's coming up. We distributed an Angela McCluskey EP that came out today.
Oh, that's great. What's the story behind that?
It's called Lambeth Palace. She's been working on new tunes for quite a while now. We have a bunch. We probably have 40 demos, and the plan is to release a string of EPs, which will lead into a full length with a collaboration with someone who I cannot announce yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Like that, huh?
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
I'll be back.
You'll be back. You'll be back. We'll bring you on for a proper thing.
Yeah, so we have that, the Punches EP that just came out. We are distributing the Pop Manifesto, which is a record label.
Oh, cool.
The Blood Diamonds.
Yeah. And love those guys.
Yeah. So there's some releases coming up from that. On our label proper, we have The Narcisse.
Love them. Brooklyn Homegrown.
Yes.
Love those guys.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them in forever, though.
Yeah. Well, Michael Cheever, one half, is in 4 or 5 separate projects.
Yeah.
And he produced the Frankie Rose EP.
Oh, right. And he's just ripping bass everywhere.
Yep. So.
And then also we got festival season coming up. Let's talk a little bit about festival season. So South by Southwest is behind us, which is, I always think, the kickoff to the 2000 fill in the blank festival season.
It is.
And we got Coachella.
Yeah.
Which is now being spread out over 2 weekends, which I think, they sold out, so I guess it worked out, but I think a lot of people are like still deciding. I heard first weekend is more going to be industry people going out.
Most of the people I know are going in the first weekend, but we'll see how it plays out. I don't think you can really tell until it's over.
And I foresee a lot of people, you know, going up for the first weekend and then sticking around.
Absolutely.
You know, just be like, oh, I'm just going to work out of LA remotely out of my hotel room. And
yeah, a lot of people are.
And I know a big shout out to Greg, who's out in Palm Springs right now. They have a ton of amazing programming over at the Ace Hotel, which is going to be, I think I'd have more fun hanging out just in Palm Springs in the week in between than trying to deal with like the festival and things like that.
It's a beautiful place there.
It's a beautiful place.
A lot of friends.
Friendly friends. A lot of friends.
Uh-huh.
And if you find a pair of Ray-Bans in the pool, they're Travis's.
Can I have them back, please?
Can you have them back? And then you are also making the trip to Spain.
I am. I'll be at Primavera this year. And I think I'm going to stick around in Europe for a little bit and come back to Barcelona and go to the Sonar Festival, which is a week later.
So wait, you're going to go to Barcelona, come home, and then go back?
No, I'll go to London or somewhere in between and then come back for Sonar.
Now, what's the difference in those two festivals?
Well, they're actually getting closer and closer in terms of programming.
Yeah.
Sonar was known for being the techno and underground electronic music festival, while Primavera is more band focused. But this year there's a lot of DJ and electronic music programmed into Primavera, and then with Sonar you have someone like Lana Del Rey playing.
Yeah.
So
I mean, when you start, I mean, it just all is sort of becoming one sort of just genre of music, which is just sort of back to, I hate to use the word pop, but it really is, you know, when house tracks are now the beats for most rap songs,
right,
hip hop songs, it's, you know, you sort of just
right
start having,
I
mean, this
I'm not opposed to it. I don't think there's any reason why underground techno shouldn't be able to exist with Lana Del Rey.
No,
you know, in terms of a festival billing. You know, it just opens it up. There's more access to new music for more people, and that's fine. I mean, how well Lana Del Rey will be received at Sonar, I can't tell you that, but for the people that she attracts, it's nice that they'll be exposed to music that they probably haven't heard before and probably won't. I mean, I wish that would have happened to me when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like, you know, I would just go to the Warped Tour, and it was just 20 of the same bands.
Right.
Maybe one, you know, had horns for a ska beat. You know?
Do you like ska?
I used to. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I fell in love with dance music.
Yeah.
It was the first dance music I really liked.
Yeah.
I guess maybe like swing music when I was 13. I heard like Benny Goodman or something like that.
Right, right.
I would say my biggest advice for anyone who's going to the festival circuit, because Europe, like, you know, the lineup is sort of, they just move sort of like in this like west, east, clockwise sort of loop. It's just sort of pick where you want to vacation, and then just find, if you want to go to a festival, find out when the festival is and go there at that time, because you can sort of see all the same headlining acts at all the festivals in Europe.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, no one's too exclusive to any one festival. They are the festivals that do really get the, you know, less than normal, like, touring festival headliners, like Glastonbury.
Yeah.
You know, they had, what, Beyonce?
Yeah.
For a headliner?
Which is, I mean, I'd say, I'd awesome. See Beyonce. I'd totally see Beyonce.
I'd love to see Beyonce.
It'd be so great to go to a festival and see something like that.
I agree.
Yeah, so. Well, anyway, I think that's it for the show. I think we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, let's go back to work.
It's a beautiful day. Super excited. Shout out to Greg. Again, shout out to Chris and Julia for their lovely wedding. We are here next week with Mitchell Davis, who is going to be talking about the James Beard Awards, and John Norris. And Travis Hayden will be back as our co-host. But I feel like I should never announce our next week guest, because I feel like that jinx it, and then this thing is podcast for forever, and I just, you know.
That'll be fun.
It'll make it fine. Yeah.
about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.